Hello and welcome to Swiss Info's program for June 27th. I'm Susan Masika.
So he knows very well the Japanese culture, mentality, and of course Japanese food.
And we really had to be quite honest about how we feel about everything and our emotions right now.
And we didn't think that was smart, and we, as a state, decided to move more in the direction of solar.
There's a lot of opportunities for sports to do, and sports is great, but yoga offers something deeper.
Here in the Northern Hemisphere, it's officially summertime. That means more daylight, and ideally, more sunshine for outdoor fun, and for machines that run on solar power. Like Solar Impulse 2, the Swiss airplane trying to fly around the world without any jet fuel. It's an undertaking that requires lots of sun, and no wind or rain. The adventure began in the United Arab Emirates in March. After scheduled stops in Oman, India, Myanmar, and China, bad weather over the Pacific forced the plane to make an unexpected landing in Japan on June 1st. The plane has been stranded there ever since because of repair work and rainy weather. But like most clouds, this one also has a silver lining. Kuniko Satonobu, the head of Swiss Info's Japanese department, says the pit stop at Nagoya Airport has been a hit with the locals.
Now, nobody expected the Solar Impulse to actually land in Japan. Is it true that some people thought it was a UFO?
Yes. 2-3 hours before landing of Solar Impulse, we noticed in Facebook or Twitter that several people were writing it was a UFO. And also several media wrote about this anecdote. Asahi Shimbun, it's the biggest newspaper in Japan, said that 30 or 40 persons contacted the police because they thought it's a UFO. It is very funny.
That is funny. 40 people thought they saw a UFO. And in fact, though, it was the Solar Impulse making an unexpected landing there because the weather was bad. Now, how has Japan reacted to this special guest from Switzerland?
Apparently, the Japanese authority reacted in a very flexible way and welcomed Solar Impulse. And you know that Japanese people love Switzerland in general. So it's evident that the Swiss-made airplane is warmly welcomed by the Japanese people. But especially as they thought it's a UFO, this information spread all over Japan. The next day of the landing, thousands of people came to see Solar Impulse. Since then, around 1,000 people a day come to the airport. Some school trips were also organized, and 100 media people came to the press conference. They love this airplane.
It's incredible, really, and I think it's actually been, in a way, very good media coverage for them to get all these visitors.
Yes, more and more.
Co-pilot André Borschberg, so he's there now, and it turns out that he knows Japan pretty well, doesn't he?
Yeah, because, you know, he has lived for a year in Tokyo. He worked as a business consultant, so he knows very well the Japanese culture, mentality, and, of course, Japanese food. He wanted to go back to Japan one day, and he is happy to realize it in such a way by chance.
Sort of a silver lining, then, to being there longer than expected.
Mm-hmm.
In 2011, there was that nuclear disaster in Fukushima. How has that affected how people think about energy?
Yes, well, a lot of people started to use and develop clean energy. You know, during almost 4 years after Fukushima happened, we did not use any more nuclear power, completely at all. But the press office of Solar Impulse said to me that visitors and journalists asked a lot of questions on solar energy and clean energy of Solar Impulse. It's a fantastic reaction, I think, because it's a Solar Impulse message is to develop clean energy and clean technology.
That was Kuniko Satonobu, head of the Japanese department here at SwissInfo.ch. On June 23rd, the forecast was friendly enough for Mission Control to consider sending Solar Impulse co-pilot André Borschberg on the mission's most daring leg, crossing the Pacific and landing in Hawaii, a 5-day trip. The plane was already in the runway, with Borschberg in the cockpit, when the trip was called off. A huge disappointment, says Solar Impulse spokesman Connor Lennon.
Hard for everyone. Very hard for the pilot, as you can imagine, who was mentally trying to get himself into the mode of piloting a very, very experimental plane over 5 days and 5 nights. And for us here, because we had all been ready, we'd all been prepared, and we really had to be quite honest about how we feel about everything and our emotions right now. Luckily, our president and initiator, Bertrand Picard, who's also on the pilots, he's here with us. He's a trained psychiatrist, and I think in moments like this, it's good to have someone who's used to dealing with these sort of psychologically trying situations. Right now, the various members of the team are looking at ways to improve the way we work and make sure that we can move on to the next stage. And we're still confident about the next flight. The question, though, is just when.
And so how much longer, realistically, can you wait for another five-day window to leave Nagoya?
Well, obviously, we're in a situation now where the summer solstice has passed. We've had the longest day of the year, and we can't wait forever. We're going to go on to the last possible moment, mm-hmm. go as far as we can as well. But if we can't make it this year, then we'll carry on. And we'll only have failed when we decide to stop trying. Whatever happens, however far we get, this will still always be the longest flight during this round of world flight attempt. And we'll have achieved something which is extraordinary. It's never been done before. In solar aviation, every time we fly, more or less, we break new records. During the last flight, André Borsberg flew 44 hours from Nanjing to Nagoya. That's 2 days and almost two nights with a solar plane which doesn't have any fuel. So you can see already that what we're doing is groundbreaking every single time, and we're pushing the bar very, very high. This has never been done, a five-day flight. We're being very careful about our risk mitigation. You know, we're not going to take a risk where we say, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We could lose the pilot and lose the plane. This is all part of what goes along with being in a high-risk, very experimental project.
And, well, so if you can't continue as planned, is the mission a failure then, if you can't go around the world after all?
Well, it's only a failure if we decide to stop trying. And at the moment, looking at the spirit of the team and knowing the pilots as I do, there's no chance of giving up. This mission has been difficult from the start. This mission has been difficult for 12 years. That's when we started. And from the very beginning, there were people saying it would be impossible and that we should just give up. I mean, this is part of pioneering. This is part of exploration, is of deciding when to ignore the critics and carry on. I really don't think that the people managing this project are going to fail. The question is how long it takes. We've no idea. When Bertrand Picard was the first man to go around the world in a hot air balloon in 1999, it took him three attempts. We've publicly put it out there that we might not make it in 2015. But rather than saying we're all going to give it up and go home, the message is that we keep on trying. If we don't do it this year, we do it next year. If we don't do it next year, we do the year after that. So that's where we're at now. We're in a tough situation, I have to admit, psychologically as well. But there's still a good team spirit here around me, the people who are here with me in Monaco at the Mission Control Center. And my understanding is it's the same for the team who are with the plane currently in Nagoya. So for the moment, we carry on, you know, stiff upper lip, and we keep going.
That was Solar Impulse spokesman Connor Lennon. The deadline for leaving Japan is August 5th. After that, the days will be too short, and the project will have to wait until next spring to continue. If and when the Solar Impulse reaches Hawaii, it will still have another long flight to reach the continental United States. It's supposed to land in Phoenix, Arizona, which is sunny about 85% of the time. But how well do Arizona and other states make use of solar power, not to mention other forms of renewable energy? Journalist Tony Ganser reports.
In many ways, Phoenix, Arizona is a natural stop for a high-tech solar airplane like Solar Impulse. Just a look at Arizona place names sets one's mind to the sun, with towns like Sun City or Sun Lakes. The Valley of the Sun encompasses the area around Phoenix, the mythical bird that rises from ashes. In videos from Solar Impulse's flight across the U.S., the airplane glided over sun-soaked desert below. But the project's message found fertile ground in a 2013 graduation ceremony at Arizona State University. Solar Impulse's Bertrand Picard emphasized to engineering students how much the world needs pioneers.
The world has a lot of challenges to solve. It's technical and non-technical. It's about fighting poverty. It's about human rights. It's about financial crisis. It's about globalization. But of course, it is a lot about energy, sustainability, technologies, clean technologies that the future needs to have a brighter world.
Arizona's capital city is not new to the forefront of renewable energy issues, be they technical or political. Chris Mays is a former commissioner for Arizona's utility regulator, the Corporation Commission, who co-authored the Arizona Renewable Energy Standard. The standard called for utilities to generate 15% of their overall energy portfolio through renewable sources by 2025. It also called for an aggressive push toward distributed generation, like solar panels on rooftops.
The question was, as Arizona grows, how do we want to do it? Do we want to do it in clean, smart, efficient ways, or do we want to do it the same old way we were doing it before by turning to coal plants? And we didn't think that was smart. At the Corporation Commission, we, as a state, decided to move more in the direction of solar.
Phoenix is unique in that it has a nuclear power plant providing very cheap power right next door. The Palo Verde Nuclear Generating Station is just 45 miles from downtown Phoenix. But even a nuclear power plant is not enough to satiate a metropolitan area of more than 4 million people.
We have basically grown out of Palo Verde, and we need additional power sources. And Solana is one of the solutions that we reached for.
Solana is a massive concentrating solar plant in Gila Bend, Arizona, southwest of Phoenix.
The Arizona sun is so powerful, we knew that we wanted to capitalize on that.
Solana was built by Spanish firm Abengoa, costing $2 billion. This promotional video shows the project's hundreds of thousands of mirrors aimed toward the sun, which heats oil used to create steam, which powers a turbine to create electricity. An added feature of Solana is its storage system. A series of salt tanks can provide up to 6 hours of thermal power, even when the sun goes down. In total, the plant provides up to 280 megawatts of power to Arizona Public Service, powering roughly 70,000 homes. But big projects are only a piece of the U.S. solar puzzle.
If you have wasted land, like in a desert, I do believe it makes sense, but it's not the future of solar.
Daniel Prokopi is a managing partner for Deutsche Eco USA, a firm which focuses on private and commercial installations of solar energy systems, primarily in the Northeast U.S.
I do believe, and this is what the market is showing in the last couple of years anyhow, that more than 50% of the installed capacity in the United States and also in Germany are not coming from utility scale. The vast majority of the installations and the driver of the whole market is actually residential solar.
There are still debates over the details and policy of America's renewable energy future, but Kate Shepard thinks there seems to be a shift in how the Americans are thinking about renewables. Shepard is a reporter and energy environment editor for the Huffington Post.
I think that people across the country are becoming more comfortable with it as something that they see. You know, they see wind farms in their community, they see solar farms, their neighbor gets solar panels on his roof. I also think that it's becoming something that there's more political support on both sides of the aisle. A lot of the biggest states for wind are Republican states, Kansas, Iowa. I mean, they're places where people are seeing it as both a promising energy development, but also promising economic development for the state, too. So I do think things are changing in the politics probably a little bit slower than they're changing in the public.
There could be difficulties in the months and years ahead as the U.S. at large focuses in on its priorities and those work through the political system. But as Solar Impulse's André Borschberg told those graduating students at Arizona State University in 2013, every difficulty is a potential opportunity.
That was Tony Ganser reporting for Swiss Info from the U.S. For the Solar Impulse pilots, the sun isn't the sole source of energy. Others include meditation and yoga. These help them cope with the long hours alone in the tiny cockpit. June 21st was the first International Yoga Day, timed to coincide with the summer solstice. Last year, 175 countries co-sponsored the United Nations resolution calling for an annual day to honor the ancient Indian tradition. Swissinfo's Dale Bechtel caught up with Gerti Pak Ahuja, a yoga instructor giving an open-air lesson in the Swiss capital, Bern. He explained why yoga is becoming increasingly popular in Western nations.
So yoga has been very popular in the West since a long time. And it is increasing in popularity because of the stress levels at work, which are going high. Yoga is great for the body, but also good for mind and the soul. This makes yoga unique, different than other sports. There's a lot of opportunities for sports to do, and sports is great, but yoga offers something deeper. With breathing techniques, you can manage and regulate temperatures in your body and release stress. So, yoga will continue to be popular as long as the stress levels in today's world are keeping up to what they are right now.
Whether you're into yoga, swimming, cycling, or just hanging around, I hope your summer is off to a good start. Be sure to visit us at swissinfo.ch for our special dossiers, Solar Impulse and Indian Intersection. I'm Susan Masika. Thanks for listening, and thank you to studio technician Daniel Wheeler.